Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Once again, it's Joe McCann and Phil Bush with you. And, Phil, we might be bad again.
Yeah, it's a struggle, to say the least.
Yeah, so we're going to break down how much trouble is Marquette in as we are officially on the bubble here with just about three or four weeks to go before Selection Sunday. And we're going to look at the next five games. How many does Marquette need to win to get into the tournament? How much trouble are they in against Xavier? And the big mess that is the Big East as we try to figure out which teams are going to get into the tournament. But Phil, let's talk about first the Georgetown disappointment from Saturday a little bit, and just the overall disappointment of the last five games. You know, ever since beating Villanova when we were on the highest of highs after that big win, Marquette has now lost four of five. The only win, of course, coming against lowly DePaul, and they've only played four teams that are projected in the field at this moment. So I am very concerned that we are watching a late season collapse by this Marquette team.
It could be. The thing I struggle with understanding is how you can perform against Creighton and Villanova. I know there's exceptions. You know, Villanova had clearly an off shooting night. Creighton was playing for the first time without Watson. But I just don't know how you achieve the results you do against a Nova and a Creighton team on the road, and then just have this level of collapse. Even with the DePaul win, it has been a collapse. And one of the things that's been very telling is we talked about it with the Butler game, and it was true again with the Georgetown game. The defense was bad in all of these games, but the offense was almost as bad. The offense, which had been kind of propelling Marquette along, and probably if we perform at our averages in that Georgetown game, we're certainly competitive. But that the team seemingly just decided to not play good offensive basketball, and I don't know if it's, you know, the season's dragging out. Players like Sam and Marcus are starting to wear down because they're freshmen and not used to the pace and the length of the season or what. But it's just clearly something is going on with this.
Yeah, I mean, big concern for me is in two of these four losses, Marquette absolutely got its doors blown off by St. John's and by Georgetown. Now, and the you mentioned the offensive numbers, Phil. In three of the four losses, Marquette had an offensive efficiency of less than 100, which in almost all of Marquette's games this year, they've been above 100, maybe well above 100 in some instances. In the DePaul win, they were at 137, which is one of their best. That is actually their best offensive output of the entire offensive efficiency of the entire season. But you know, in the Providence loss, they were at 112, which is a decent number by Marquette standards, which, you know, that's right around their season. That's a little below their season average. Their season average is 119. So a little bit below normal, but certainly not so much, though, that you would be all that concerned. But the rest of them have all been below 100. And to me, I you know, the threes have stopped falling in some instances. You know, in the last couple losses, you know, Rousey's been off, and I think Caton Reinhardt has struggled a little bit as well. And, you know, but the hope always was with this team, Phil, is that they would have enough shooters that if one or two guys were off, they could get some offense elsewhere. But it certainly hasn't been the case the last three or four games.
Well, now with the offensive struggles, do you attribute that to the offense kind of going cold or players going cold, or is – is there some sort of memo out on how to defend Marquette's offense that teams are replicating? Because one of the things they talked about in the Georgetown game, and they were correct, is they were rushing the three-point line and trying to get Marquette off the three-point line so they couldn't take some of those shots. So, you know, is this a case of Marquette's not adjusting and there's a defensive scheme that can beat them, or is it some of it just the shooting's not there? Like they've gone cold or they've had some off nights.
I think maybe a little bit is teams are maybe defending the three better against Marquette and just daring Luke Fisher to beat them. But from what I've watched the past few games, Phil, they've been hoisting a lot of bad shots.
Yeah. And they've been passing up decent shots too.
Yeah.
You know, there, especially in the Georgetown game, there were at least a half a dozen threes that would have been open in rhythm threes that might have been somewhat contested that they passed up and never got a better shot, you know, in the sequence. You know, so if you're not going to take the threes and you're not getting better shots, like there is no offense at that point.
Yeah. That's true. I you know, taking it from the team themselves, though, Phil, I mean, Dwayne Wilson had some interesting comments to the Journal Sentinel's Matt Velasquez after the Georgetown loss. I'm going to read Dwayne's quotes. Again, this is from Matt Velasquez reporting after the Georgetown game. Dwayne Wilson told him, "I think at this point it's nothing we can learn. We keep going back to the same things. We just have to grow up. It's no more coach babying us and telling us, guys, we have to be a great team. No, we've got to do what we need to do. We know what we're capable of. We've got older guys on our team. There's no more excuses for losses or all the mistakes that have been happening. There's no more excuses. We've just got to get the job done." He goes on, "We just have to be unselfish and do it the way the coaches want us to do it. I feel like today," talking about the Georgetown game, "we played the way we wanted to play. We didn't play how the coaches wanted us to play, and that's the right way. That's the reason why we lost, and we didn't play hard." Now, there's a lot to be concerned about in those quotes, Phil. But, I mean, basically what it sounds like Dwayne is saying is that some guys may have gone rogue offensively and gone away from the game plan. And that concerns me twofold. One, that players would do it to begin with, if that's true, that the players aren't executing the coach's game plan. And two, that we're at this point of the season and that some players, that the coaches apparently aren't reaching some players, because you would hope at this point of the season, anybody who's seeing the floor for any team in college basketball is a player who is bought into what the coaches are buying, are selling. And if there are players on this team who aren't listening to the coaches, which is kind of what you get from Dwayne's quote there, I'm wondering, does this coaching staff even have the team's respect?
Yeah, I don't know. I find it tough to go to that point. I there's definitely that interpretation that's available, and maybe I just want to be optimistic. But I think it's, you know, in Dwayne's quote, he's not ascribing intent to anything, right? So he's not saying people are going rogue, essentially, to paraphrase. People are going rogue because they're pissed at the coaching staff. You know, they're kind of going off book. Maybe it's out of a lack of maturity or just because they think this might work better, or they're frustrated with how things have gone the last couple of weeks and are going, well, screw it, we're gonna do it this way or whatever. So I don't want to go that far, but it's certainly on the table with that type of quote. I mean, you got to love Dwayne, he's kind of throwing shade at his own teammates, like, hey guys, we gotta straighten up and do what the coaches are telling us to do. So you know, like him as a leader, kind of calling his own team out. But it's troublesome that you have to have your redshirt junior player kind of go to the media and do that on behalf of the coaching staff. That's disconcerting, to say the least.
Yeah, and you know, he doesn't call out players by name, but I mean, you see some of the guys that have been hoisting some shots, and maybe I don't know exactly who is not following directions, but some of these 30-foot threes that have been hoisted in the last couple games are certainly probably not in the playbook. But I'm concerned that the coaching staff still isn't reaching some of the players, and maybe they're reading too many articles or reading blogs or listening to too many podcasts about how great they were after the couple big wins, and then just decided it's all gravy from here and we're going to do our own thing. And I don't know where it all came from and where it's kind of gone wrong the last few weeks, but it kind of is a concern for me that maybe the coaching staff just isn't reaching the players, both the way the offense is broken down and that the fact that the defense has really never gotten going.
Well, now, do you think, like, when you listen to Dwayne's quote, do you think he's saying that's what's gone wrong over the last couple of weeks, or do you think that he's saying that's what went wrong with Georgetown? So, you know, what I'm trying to say is this skid because people kind of started listening to their own hype and started going rogue since Nova, because they're like, oh, we're great, we can do whatever we want? Or is this something like over the last couple of weeks people have gotten frustrated and started to say, hey, you know, let's that the coach doesn't know what they're talking about, we're just going to go do our thing? You know, which way would you take it?
I hope I wouldn't go that far, that maybe the players don't respect the coaches and are just doing their own thing. But I don't know, maybe they – maybe like you suggested earlier, maybe it is a little immaturity or laziness at some point that maybe, you know, to be – I mean, for great basketball, all the great basketball teams have such an intense focus, and the best players out there have that focus for all 40 minutes. And maybe some of these guys just lose focus out there and get a little excited to hoist up a long three or rush a shot, or, you know, just forget what the game plan is, or just lose their assignment on defense. I think now Dwayne's quotes were about the Georgetown game specifically, but I don't know if he would have come out and said those things if it hadn't been a problem in the past. I don't think it's a one game problem. Maybe it's something that Dwayne has seen a lot over the last five games or so, and maybe just made his blood boil a little bit and just decided to make those comments when he was asked about what went wrong. And it's probably something he's noticed, because, you know, Dwayne's actually been playing pretty good ball the last few games. I think it is just about the Georgetown game, but I think some of those things have been issues the last four or five games.
Right. Well, the one concern I have, and this maybe fits in with kind of the coaching staff and the players a little bit at odds, I do wonder if the players or the coaching staff isn't overcoaching a little bit. And I know that sounds ridiculous with how the defense has performed, but I really think you look at the team in end-of-game situations, you know, not recognizing in the first 10, 15 seconds that the coaching staff was calling for a foul, the talk about how, you know, Luke Fisher struggled because he was thinking too much on the defensive end and was picking up fouls and wasn't doing what he was supposed to do because he had to communicate, and statements that have been made about how the defense plays much better in the first half when they're in front of their own bench and the coaches can communicate effectively with them. You know, I really am starting to wonder if you know, the coaching staff is kind of in their heads, in the players' heads, and the players aren't just playing basketball. They're trying to execute, because there was a number of times in that Georgetown game, and I think the color announcer even said something, or maybe it was the play-by-play guy. The play-by-play guy maybe said it. I can't remember. But anyway, when there was plays going on, there were times where Luke Fisher was matched up against, you know, a smaller player that Georgetown had switched. And at least one or two times, Marcus Howard called for Luke Fisher to come out to screen on that play, because that seemed to be what set they were supposed to run. And it's like, if you've got Luke Fisher in the post with a guy 5 inches shorter than him, I don't care what the set is, feed the post. Right. And so there seems to be some lack of basketball IQ going on within the flow of the game, because they're perhaps thinking too much.
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting thing to pick up on, is, you know, when you have experienced, you know, guards out there who, you know, they're a little more prone to improvise and do it well, and maybe this team doesn't have that freedom, and if they don't do exactly what the coach says, maybe they know they're heading to the bench. And maybe the overcoaching thing is something interesting. You know, you bring up the defense thing, and the idea that they're better defensively in the first half when the coaches can talk to them, that almost kind of concerns me, because every team is away from their coaching staff. So does that mean the offense is better in the second half because the coaches, you know, that shouldn't be an issue, really.
What are we doing in practice?
Right. You know, I mean, I would hope the guys know their assignments for the most part. And yeah, it helps to have, you know, guys barking out things they miss from time to time. But man, it's just, you know, sometimes the Wojo says things that, I mean, he doesn't mean for them to come off this way, but it almost comes off like he may be in over his head when he made the comment after the Georgetown game when somebody asked him if Dwayne Wilson should be playing more, and he's like, yeah, he probably should. And
yeah, you know, that set off a bit of a fire on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, like the those in the Wojo can't coach camp, you know, certainly grip onto things like that. And, you know, the comment he made a few weeks ago, like, I don't know what's wrong with this team, or I don't know what's going on. You know, like, I know he doesn't mean for it to come off bad on him, or maybe he's trying to take some of the heat off of his players when he says that, but I don't know. It just makes him and the coaching staff look a little in over their heads. And, you know, I guess maybe he needs come up with a little bit better way of phrasing certain things, and maybe just throw some BS at the media that they can still call it BS, but at least he doesn't come off as I'm in over my head here. Because, you know, I'll be interested to see if Dwayne Wilson does start the next game after that comment he made after the last press conference. Yeah, maybe Dwayne should be starting, which Dwayne should be.
He should be, and Juwan Johnson should be playing as few minutes as possible based on his performance of late.
Yeah, he's been struggling. So would your starting five be obviously Fisher, Dwayne at the two? Would you have Cheatham move over to the three then?
You know, I would probably have my starting lineup right now would probably be Rousey, Dwayne, Cheatham, Hauser. I think based on the way Caton's been playing, I think it's Hauser to start and then Fisher as the start. And I would probably bring Caton as the first person off the bench, either for Hauser or Cheatham, depending on how he's playing. Because Cheatham, I mean, all due respect to Cheatham, and he's still, I still have tremendous hopes for his potential at Marquette. And his defense, he's the only guy on the perimeter that can guard consecutive possessions. But having said that, Cheatham's offense is just not contributing right now, so I don't know that you can play him max minutes anymore.
Yeah, he's been a bit of a funk, and you know, for me, the point guard spot is a coin flip. Whoever's hot between Rousey and Howard, like whoever wins the pregame 3-point shooting contest can
right.
start at the point guard. But yeah, I think Dwayne should be getting more minutes at the two and just seeing what he can do, because, you know, Dwayne has shown some really good flashes of late, and, you know, whether it's an outside shot or just driving to the basket and hitting some tough shots in traffic, I think Dwayne, especially with his leadership on this team and his effort defensively, not that Dwayne's necessarily an elite defender, but I think he gives really good effort.
Yeah, well, and I would say if you took everyone at their best that they've been able to perform this season, I think Dwayne Wilson is the best two-way player. Right, that he can contribute successfully on the offensive end, and he can contribute successfully on the defensive end. I think every other player we have is going to be better offensively or defensively. They're not nearly as balanced as Dwayne Wilson is.
Yeah. So, but yeah, hopefully he will be rewarded with a little more playing time against Xavier, maybe the rest of the season. Hopefully.
Well, let me ask you a question. If he doesn't start on Saturday against Xavier, does that either A, mean anything to you, or B, is that a reflection on the coaching staff? Is that another nail in the maybe Wojo can't coach coffin?
Well, if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't start and doesn't play a lot, and they go out and lose again,
yeah,
I would be like, or maybe they're just kind of stubborn set in their ways as far as starts and rotations at this point of the season. But they've had a full week to figure it out and look at the film and say, look, maybe Dwayne gives us our best chance to win. And I think if they look at the last five games and what he's done and what other options have done there at the two, I think it's safe to say it's worth giving Dwayne a shot out there.
Right. So, well, and the only reason seemingly he's not getting more minutes than he already is because he gets into foul trouble.
Yeah.
But that's also in part because he's guarding bigger guys, because he comes in to play the three a lot. And that's it's just not a great fit for him, and he gets in trouble guarding against taller guys. But I think at this point, based on how it's been going, you have to change something, right? I mean, you can't roll the same lineup out there and you know, yes, you've had a week off and hopefully you're mentally and physically rested, but you can't roll the same lineup out there and just assume it's going to be better, right?
No, I don't think you can, because I mean, the team is in a funk, and you got to try to change something to try to to try to get a few wins in these last five games, because Marquette desperately needs them if they want to make the tournament.
Right.
And the opportunity to make the tournament is still there, certainly, but they're right there. I mean, they are the definition. I mean, Team Bubble Watch is back.
Yeah.
This team. I mean, that is exactly what Marquette is, because every game they're going to go take a noticeable shift one way or the other. And so, yeah, and who knows, maybe coming off the bench we could see a little more energy or focus from Juwan Johnson, and maybe it could light a fire under him, and maybe we could get a little bit more out of him. And, you know, so you split the minutes between Cheatham and Johnson there at the three, or, you know, if Cheatham comes in for Dwayne, who knows what or how exactly he'll work it out. But, you know, just maybe just shaking things up, and maybe there'll be a little different energy to the team. I don't know, but
well, you got to do something to reward the energy and the leadership, right? I mean, even if you say Dwayne's not our best player, if you make that, you know, we want to play our best players, but you got to, what this team lacks is, and you mentioned it earlier, is focus, right? I mean, they're seemingly without energy at times and without focus and make simple mental mistakes. I think Dwayne kind of is the guy that can kind of bring everybody together when they're out there and retain that focus and build that energy that team seemingly desperately needs.
Maybe he can be that coach on the floor they need.
Right.
And, you know, maybe they don't need the coaches yelling them at as much on defense if Dwayne's out there talking and making sure everybody's in the right spot. So I'll be interested to see how Dwayne is used in the next game and if it makes a difference at all against Xavier. Because, Phil, you look at these last five games, you know, I still think Marquette needs three wins in the last five. And, I said during the Georgetown game they need four out of their last seven. Well, now it's down to four out of their last six. I still think, you know, if you finish the season at 9-9 in conference play, I'm still not going to be 100% confident heading into Selection Sunday. You're going to probably – you know, a win in the Big East tournament would help and make me feel a little more comfortable. But it's certainly going to be tough, because if you look at the Big East standings, I would say only 1 and 10 are solid right now.
Right.
I am very comfortable declaring Villanova the Big East champs. You know, even though there's just a 2-game lead at the moment, I don't think that lead is going to get smaller over the next five games. I think it's only going to get larger, and Big East and Villanova is going to win another Big East title. And DePaul is all but locked into the 10 spot. And it's pretty much a cluster from 2 to 9.
Right.
Now Creighton, Butler, and Xavier are probably going to finish in the top four in some order. But my concern with Marquette, they could finish ninth, and it would not be a shock right now.
Well, that's the thing. When you look at the Xavier game, you know, and we've talked about must-win games and that sort of thing, but I truly believe, given the funk that they're in, having a week off, all the swirl around the program, if they don't beat Xavier on their home court, a night game on a Saturday night with this cockamamie stripe-out thing going on.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, let's touch on that later, but if it with the what would presumably be a good sized and energetic crowd, if they don't win that game, they win maybe one game out of the rest of the season. They're just clearly not going to be good enough to win more than maybe one game. And now you're talking all of a sudden NIT, easily NIT.
Yeah, you know, you look at the last five, you almost got to circle St. John's and Providence as games you absolutely have to win. With all due respect to Providence, who's been playing well, you know, Phil, I thought we all agreed before the season that St. John's and Providence would keep DePaul company in the basement. They have not complied with that strategy.
Well, apparently handshakes are not binding.
Yeah, so they've gone out and screwed that up, and St. John's and Providence are right in the mix with Marquette. You know, they are one of these five teams that could finish fifth between Marquette, St. John's, Providence, Seton Hall, and Georgetown. They're all five of those teams right now are looking at it. We can finish fifth, maybe better. That every single one of them is thinking that heading into these last few weeks here. So, but you know, and so, but still, being Providence is another bubble team. That's a team you have to go beat them, especially since they already beat you once, and you don't want to go to Selection Sunday having a sweep at the hands of Providence on your resume if the committee has to pick between you and them. So for that reason, you have to beat Providence, even though it's a road game, and you have to beat St. John's because, even though, you know, they're right in the middle of the Big East, still their, I mean, their RPI, their KenPom numbers aren't that great. So you have to beat St. John's. So then you got to find a way to get at least one more win against three really tough games, two against Xavier and then the home finale against Creighton. Now, Xavier, you know, Marquette is, they have been beating up on the wound. They have beat up on the wounded before this season, you know, getting that win over Creighton the day after they lost Watson. Now Xavier, having already lost Edmund Sumner, Blewett did not play on Wednesday night in a loss to Providence. So his status is up in the air for Saturday, but no apologies, injuries happen. So yeah, because it is a home game, must win is kind of a cliche, but this is a game that Marquette really needs on Saturday against Xavier. Like you said, Phil, it's going to be hopefully a full house, going to be a packed house, emotional crowd, National Marquette Day against the team that is banged up, missing at least one key player, possibly two, depending on how Blewett progresses between now and Saturday. It's an important opportunity, and they can maybe give Marquette a little breathing room on the good side of the bubble. I mean, as we're recording this on Wednesday night, surprisingly, most bracketologists do still have Marquette in, which is stunning to me, and it maybe speaks to the weakness of the bubble that you can lose 4 out of 5 games against the teams Marquette has lost to and still technically be in the tournament, according to most projections. But
yeah, I think that's really, really a function of the mid-majors. Basically, everyone's penciling in the automatic qualifier, no matter who it is in, and that's about it.
Yeah, and you know, if you go into championship week as one of the projected last four in, you can't be comfortable because the committee always – there's always a couple surprises that the committee makes, and plus there's always bids that are stolen by some surprise winners in conference tournaments. And, you know, those number of at-larges get smaller and smaller. So you do not want to be where Marquette is right now as one of the last three or four teams in the tournament. So for that reason, this game against Xavier is pretty critical. I wouldn't say it's a season make or break, but I'm on the border of calling it that just because they need a quality win here between the two Xavier games and then Creighton at the end. And this is an opportunity to get one.
The thing, like I said, what I think makes it the must win is if you lose that game, I even in my most optimistic mindset, which we all know I tend to be, I can't do the mental gymnastics that says Marquette loses at home on National Marquette Day to Xavier down potentially two of their best players and somehow comes back to win 3 out of 4 games, including 2 on the road against teams that have already beat them,
right,
and a St. John's team that has beaten them, and a Creighton team that is going to be hungry for wins for seeding purposes.
Right.
I just don't know how you get there.
It's a pretty good point. When you think of it that way, where they could be after a loss, they'd be at 6-8. And, yeah, they would have to win 3 out of the last 4 just to get to 500. And I think getting to 500 is critical.
Right. I don't think there's any way the committee will pass up other teams for a Big East team that has a losing record.
Yeah, because if Marquette's 8-10 in the Big East, that means someone else, like maybe Providence or St. John's or Georgetown, could be 9-9 and could be – and I don't think St. John's is necessarily in the tournament discussion at all. But stranger things have happened, I guess, if they win out.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, depending on, you know, some of the quality. It's amazing Georgetown is actually in the mix right now, which would have been unheard of about a month ago. I have friends who are Georgetown fans who were pretty sure a month ago that they would not get to 10 wins total this season. But they have a shot at getting 10 wins in the Big East. So there are a lot of ways these things could shake out. But for me, Phil, like I said, those games against St. John's and Providence are absolutely critical for Marquette. And then you got to find one more. And for me, the Xavier game is the best chance at that one more.
Right.
Because I think going to Xavier, you're probably going to take an L. And then Creighton, coin flip in the last one.
Right. Yeah, depending on how the team's playing. So, yeah, the Xavier game is – there's got to be a lot of focus. You're coming off a bye. The last time Marquette came off a bye, it kind of laid an egg against Villanova. But, you know, that's going to happen. Xavier is no Villanova. So it'll be interesting. I think I also think, just from an emotional standpoint, if you lose the Xavier game on National Marquette Day, I think the fan base, it's been an emotional roller coaster, and whether it's justified or not, after the highs they were on after those Creighton and Villanova losses, to lose 5 out of 6 and another one on National Marquette Day with Xavier, you know, with some injuries, I think the fan base would, I don't want to say they'd revolt, but I think there would be a lot of very discontent people.
The wind would be out of their sails.
Right.
Because, you know, if you lose Saturday, that's 3 straight home losses after Villanova. So, you know, the fans who decided, all right, I'm going to go out and see this team, this should be fun. Loss. And then now maybe, then you lose on Saturday. That would be 3 straight losses. Then they'll probably like, you know what? Now I know why I went away in the first place.
Right.
So, and I think you would lose, as some of those middling fans, you know, those casual fans of Marquette. And as I've said before, the loyal fans are always going to be there. The season ticket holders, they're always going to be at every game. But you need the middle-of-the-road casual fans if you want to get 18,000 at the Bradley Center. If you want to fill the place up, you need them there. And I think you risk losing them if you lose Saturday. They'd say, well, that's probably the season. And it might be. And I think you would kind of get that feeling losing 5 out of 6, 3 straight at home.
Right.
That would be a real bummer. So, yeah. And it's on National Marquette Day, which is fun. You know, if you're around the country, if you're not in the city of Milwaukee, you know, wherever you live, there's a good chance there is a National Marquette Day watch party in your city. So if you have a chance, go out there, watch, bond with some fellow Marquette alums. It's always a good time. I do that here in Dallas every year. And if you go to the game, Phil, make sure you're wearing the right color. What's your color, Phil? Do you have your shirt picked out?
My color is gold, so it's okay. The easiest.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. See, you know, I think it is an ambitious plan, but as the folks at Marquette have said, you know, football stadiums do this with 70,000. Can we do it with 18,000?
Here's the problem I have. And you know this, as we've talked in the past, as I'm not opposed to this concept at all. I mean, as a Penn State football fan, they were one of the originators of kind of the whiteouts for the football stadium, and they've done different things. They've done a stripe out, and they've done different things. Two very critical differences between those types of things and what Marquette's doing here that just baffles my mind. One, in most of the whiteouts for the coordinated colors, there's usually some sort of T-shirt giveaway involved in that.
That's the simple way to do it. You put the T-shirt on the seat and
right.
say, put this shirt on.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the other aspect is, I have never seen a 3-color plan. I'm not saying people aren't educated enough, but they have enough going on in their lives that they're not going to, you know, if you got a blue and a gold, that's much easier than am I championship blue or navy blue or am I gold? What section am I in? I got to remember. Maybe I got to go buy that. Like, why can't we just go blue and gold?
Now you're a season ticket holder.
Yes.
Have they been alerting season ticket holders saying this is your color? Like, did you get an email or a text or something?
Yeah. So there's been emails. They put it up on the scoreboard. You've got all that stuff. But, you know, so I fully expect the season ticket holders will be with the menu. I'm going to be curious to see how many people actually dress that way, because there's definitely some of the what we term the gold sweater vest territory that are not gold in color. So I'll be curious to see if they actually show up in the appropriate color. And it's the casual fans. Like, so if you get fans that are just excited to go, I don't know how many of them are going to, you know, look like, and if you go with this ambitious plan and you don't pull it off, I mean, it just kind of adds to the general air of want around the program right now.
I hope it turns out. My expectations are a little low, because I know Marquette has tried gold outs in the past and it's been kind of a, you know, lukewarm reception. It hasn't been, it's been like, what, like 85% participation? Like, you know, like, good effort, but it just doesn't look perfect, doesn't look great, like those great whiteouts you see on TV or things like that. I hope the fans prove me wrong. Looks like the entire student section is gold, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, because if you look at the map, there's one big section on that one side that's all gold. I'm saying that students are all gold. And so if you're going to the game, look at the map, go on Twitter. Marquette's tweeted it out several times. Or go on Marquette's website. You can find the map. Know your color. Wear your color. If you're a Marquette fan, I guarantee you have one of those three color shirts, because they've given out hundreds over right. the years.
And if you're unsure, bring all three and just put on whatever you need. I mean,
and they are selling shirts there for like $10.
That's
for those
correct.
who missed the memo. So, you know, if we can get a high percentage of participation in this thing, you know, like if you get like 90% participation, maybe that last 10% is like, oh, well, I'm screwing this up. Let me go out and buy a $10 shirt.
I'm really curious to see, A, like how successfully it gets pulled off, and B, how, if anything, how it looks on television, right? Like,
yeah,
will
like,
people
yeah,
be
right.
able to tell?
Right, yeah, that's the thing. That'll be the first thing, because, you know, if it's kind of like mixed and matched and not, you know, perfect looking, the television crews might not even notice.
Right.
You know, they might not, you know, they say, oh, there's a lot of different colors here. But so if it's well defined, the TV crews will be like, oh, check out what Marquette did. This looks pretty cool. And then they'll pan out and show the whole thing. So I'll be watching on television, and I hope it looks good on TV. So
right.
it is an ambitious plan. I hope it works. I hope it looks good, but I'm a little nervous for the execution of the thing.
I would just like someone in the athletic department to tell me why they're not giving away shirts. Like, if you're going to do this, just give away the shirts. And I have a sneaking suspicion the answer is there was not a sponsor for it.
Well, yeah.
But
I understand if they can't get us. But, you know, but like you said before, Phil, the best ones, these white outs or gold outs, blue outs, whatever they are, is, you know, you get the T-shirt giveaway, put them in the seat, the fan puts it on, and it looks perfect. But, you know, couldn't happen this time. Hopefully maybe we get a sponsor behind it next time. But prove us wrong, Marquette. Wear your right shirt, get to the game, stripe it out. And you know, back to your question, well, why not just do blue and gold? I think this three-color thing is just as ambitious as blue and gold. It's just maybe just like a little bit more.
Yeah.
So it maybe just a little bit more. And it's more true to what, you know, the Marquette tradition, because, you know, those three colors have been a big part of it for a while. You know, maybe there was a stretch where it was just blue and gold. But ever since they kind of redid the uniforms a few years ago, you know, the championship blue came back in and, you know, call back to those jerseys in the 70s and everything. So I like the attempt to celebrate Marquette's 100th history or 100th anniversary and all that. So should be a fun weekend of celebration. Looks like they're having a big pep rally on Friday night, which that should be fun. They're having an alumni game. I'm curious to see who's going to be there and what kind of celebration they're going to have. So looks like they're going to have some fun activities this week. So
yeah, I think overall it'll be good. I'm excited to see, you know, excited to see how it turns out. It'll be fun, and it'll be even more fun if Marquette can win.
Gosh, and I hope they do. I'm nervous to actually make a prediction, though, because I am, based on what I've seen the last five games, I don't know if I can predict them to beat anyone right now.
Yeah.
Right, see how they are when they're desperate. I mean, if the back's against the wall and they absolutely have to get a win, see if they come out and show me something this Saturday.
I mean, if they lose, we may have to shut the podcast down for the rest of the season. Like, there may not be anything to talk about.
Maybe we will. Just shut it down. Just shut the whole thing down. Because I don't know if anybody wants to listen to us say, well, they still stink over and over again.
But I will go out on a limb. And again, this is – I don't have any – evidence to back this up. I've been saying, I said I thought they would beat Georgetown. Clearly, they were barely, if at all, competitive at times with Georgetown. You know, the combination of desperate, hopefully the coaching staff making some lineup changes or potentially even some strategy changes, a week of rest, the fact that they have to have this game, the energy, it's a night game, Xavier's coming off a loss and potentially, you know, not having one of their – probably won't have Blewett, and if they do, maybe not at 100%, plus they're without Sumner. I don't see how this could be a loss.
I can see how it can be a loss.
I mean, they
go out and shoot poorly and don't guard anybody. They could lose to absolutely anyone.
So pretty much the way last five games have gone?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the way they've played the last five games, I could see them losing to anyone except DePaul.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, and that's pretty much what's happened the last five games.
Right.
Is they have lost to everyone. But, gosh, you got to hope those shots fall at home. Hope there's a big energy and the team responds. And
I think the fans are going to be desperate to cheer. The energy will be there. I have every confidence that the energy will be there if the team is performing. But if the team gets down early, or there's it's the struggle bus the whole way, you know, I could see the fans kind of sitting on the hands a little bit. So I think the team has to come out confident and strong those first 5-10 minutes of that game and really establish themselves. But we'll see. I can't be in the prediction business anymore because I've been wrong just about every time.
Yeah, so I've been wrong every time, so they lose this week.
Good. I take it. I'll take it.
Let's do it. All right, well, as always, we thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs, everyone. We welcome your feedback on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3, Phil is M00F23. You can hit us up. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. CrackSidewalks.com is where we post the podcasts. Rate us and review us on iTunes. There's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well where we post everything. Good luck, Phil. Wear the right freaking shirt on Saturday, please.
Yes, sir. I've got my gold ready. So does the wife character as well as Owen. We're good.
And if you don't have the right shirt, bring $10.
It's the least you can do.
Seashells and balloons, everyone.